This week's Dark Side of the Ring episode focused on the many faces of Luna Vachon. Outside of the steroid trials episode, which is coming up in a couple of weeks, that's the season finale for season 3. This was probably the other one that I was most looking forward to, because I remember Luna as a young WWF fan. I remember when she came in her feud with Sherry Martel, her as the main squeeze for Bam Bam Bigelow, and her Attitude Era run with Goldust, and then with the Oddities before she disappeared. I did not know the extent of her mental health issues. I knew she was bipolar. I remember reading that when she passed away. But she could be really tough to handle with her mood swings. It reminded me when they were talking about her behavior here in this episode and all of that. It reminded me a lot of the Chris Kanyon episode and the stories that Jim Mitchell told about how one minute Kanyon would be his best friend and he'd be the nicest, most affable guy in the world. And then the next he would have his hands around Mitchell's throat trying to strangle him in a fit of rage. And then later he wouldn't remember a thing. He wouldn't even have any recollection of it happening. So there were a lot of similarities, I think, between these two episodes. I got to meet Luna twice. Once in 1994 at the first fan fest that WWE ever did, the weekend of WrestleMania 10. I got her autograph. I met her briefly. You know, it was cool. It wasn't like she was a big favorite of mine or anything. I remember they had the dunk doink tank. And then over here, just kind of standing with nobody really caring, was Nikolai Volkoff. I felt bad. I went over. I got his autograph. But that was the first time I met Luna. And then later on, in 98, they had sent a group of wrestlers up to our suite. There was a live Raw's War out in New Jersey. And they sent them up there, you know, Owen and Mick Foley and Mark Henry, and Luna was the other person. And they were just kind of hanging out with us for a while. And she was a total sweetheart. Just a really nice lady. The opposite of the character that she had played on TV for all those years. Luna is one of those women. And I put her and Sherry Martel in the same category. Who would have been more appreciated for their talent and they would have been much bigger names had they come along years later. Especially now. I mean, the women, you know, as I think mainstream, and I say mainstream, but everything is relative. I'm not saying that the women in wrestling today are huge mainstream megastars or anything like that. Some of them are bigger names than others. But with the way that women's wrestling is today, as compared to how it was treated in this country, let's say 25 years ago or 30 years ago, I mean, my God, I mean, they would fit right in. You know, they would be big names today. I would say even bigger than they were back then, because they wouldn't be just valets. They wouldn't be just managers like they were at that time. They would actually be able to get in the ring and they would be able to show off more of their personality and cut promos and do a lot more than what WWE and WCW had them doing, you know, back at that time. And they had reps, both women, Sherry and Luna, both had reps as being very tough, almost like one of the boys. Because back then you had to be, if you were going to make it in that world and be respected and be taken seriously, you had to. You had to fit in. Missy Hyatt told the story years ago about a ring roast event where New Jack went on this drunken tirade about her. And Luna was friends with Missy. And Luna was at the event, and she didn't take too kindly to what New Jack was saying about Missy Hyatt, and she was ready to fight New Jack. Now, I don't know that she would have won that fight. New Jack, drunk or sober, is not somebody I would have picked a fight with. But she didn't care. She was ready to beat the piss out of him. They interviewed her father, adopted father, Paul Butcher Vachon, for this episode. He sounds very rough these days. They needed subtitles for him. I assume that's from the throat cancer that he had. He had to have his jaw completely reconstructed many years ago from all the radiation treatments. They spoke with some older women's wrestlers who had worked with Luna and knew her, including Mad Maxine. Medusa was interviewed, Mick Foley, Gangrel, who was married to Luna for many years, and Luna's son, Van. And I did not know this, but my brother did. He recognized him right away from the show Hell's Kitchen with Gordon Ramsay, because he's a big Hell's Kitchen fan. And he did mention, you know, Van mentioned at one point in the episode that he had been attending culinary school many years ago. But Luna's son was a contestant on Hell's Kitchen. Two different seasons, season 6 and season 17. He was Chef Van. I had no way of knowing this. I had no clue. But I suspect that if you are a Hell's Kitchen fan, you probably would have watched this and go, hey, I know this guy from somewhere. How she got into wrestling really goes back to 1966. They told the story of this hotel owner who one night decided to take his own life. He shot himself in his hotel. And it just happened to be the same hotel that Butcher Vachon was staying at. He even heard the gunshot from inside his room. He didn't know exactly what it was or where it was coming from at first. It was, I guess, a single gunshot, and he didn't seem overly concerned. He decided to go back to sleep. And he woke up the next morning. He had learned then that this guy had shot himself, and he learned about what happened from the man's wife, who at the time had a 4-year-old daughter. Well, Vachon ended up marrying the widow. So, smooth move there by the butcher. And, yeah, he gave the widow a shoulder to cry on after this great tragedy. But that little girl, that 4-year-old daughter, was Luna. And she was essentially adopted into the Vachon family. They talked about her training at fabulous Moolah's camp. Mad Maxine told the story of Moolah taking advantage of a lot of the girls there. And we heard stuff like this in the Moolah episode that they did. And how she would pimp out, you know, a lot of these students, these young girls, who in some cases were, you know, they could be 15, 16, 17 years old, pimping them out to men. But Moolah was the person to train with at that time. If you were a woman and you wanted to make it in the wrestling business, there really was nowhere else to go. Moolah had the connections. She had the power. So eventually, Luna broke away from Moolah. She felt that she was taking a ridiculous portion of her pay as a booking fee when she would send her out on tours. They covered her time working with Kevin Sullivan in the Army of Darkness down in Florida. Her time in the UWF managing the Blackhearts, which is where she met David Heath, Gangrel, who was terrified of her. The first time they met, he said, I was terrified of this woman. I didn't want to have anything to do with her. But they ended up becoming good friends, and eventually they got married. But it was during those early years, in the 80s and in the early 90s, that Luna got caught up in the drug scene. As one of the women on this episode said, it snowed every day in Miami. And Luna was taking up to 100 pills on some days. And Gangrel briefly touched on there being what he called inappropriate family relations, and he suggested that it may have been her aunt, Vivian Vachon, who was also a wrestler, that was involved in that, but he doesn't know for sure. And then they kind of quickly moved on from it. It's like, that's a pretty big point to make, right? That's a pretty big allegation to sort of throw out there and then quickly move on from, especially if he is suggesting that that abuse may have had to do with some of Luna's problems that she had later in life. Now, Luna had other problems and mental health issues. But I would imagine that if she went through a traumatic experience like that in her youth, that certainly couldn't have helped her psyche or whatever existing problems that she may have had. Now, I know that Luna idolized her aunt. Any interview that I ever saw, any interview that I ever heard of Luna talking about her aunt Vivian, she went out of her way to praise her. She wanted to follow in her footsteps and be just like her. So if that is true, and we'll never know if it was or not, because all of the parties involved are now dead, that's awful. And they did ask Butcher Vachon here, and his response was basically to say he doesn't believe any of that. But what else would you expect him to say? Maybe he doesn't know. Maybe if something happened, he legitimately doesn't know. We'll never know for sure. But Gangrel and Luna both had dreams of one day going to WWE. Going to New York, as they said, at that time. And she got there first. She beat him to the punch. She got there in 93, and she debuted at WrestleMania, no less, as the valet for Shawn Michaels early in his run, only about a year or so into his run as a singles heel. And it's about the opposite as you could get. You talk about personalities and characters and two people. Shawn Michaels, the heartbreak kid, right, the boy toy, and Luna Vachon with half her head shaved and the veins drawn onto to the side of her head, and that gravelly voice that she just shredded her vocal cords over the years doing that voice. It's kind of like putting Zeb Coulter with Alberto Del Dipshit when he came back to WWE many years ago. It made no sense then, and it still makes no sense today. Even the people involved, even Dutch Mantel says he has no idea why they ever did that. At least here, it was a means to start a feud, start a program between Luna and Sensational Sherry, who had recently split away from Shawn Michaels. Two very good wrestlers who were used almost exclusively as managers. You know, Sherry did, she used to wrestle more often back in the 80s for WWE. And then even in her run in the 90s, she would have the occasional match or mixed tag match, but almost exclusively, both women were really just used as managers. But Luna ended up becoming the first woman ever to be featured in a WWF video game. That was WWF Raw for the Sega Genesis, and I think it came out for the SNES also. I had it for the Genesis. Came out in 94. And her son said they bought a console just so they could play that game. And what's interesting is that for as much as Medusa put over Luna during this episode, she was very complimentary of Luna and had nothing but positive things to say about her and their experiences together. It doesn't sound like Luna felt the same way about Medusa. She did a shoot interview years ago. It was her and Gangrel together. And it was very clear that if you watch that clip, she had heat with Medusa. And she talked about how she was only out for herself, and she really wasn't for the betterment of all the women. And I remember her mentioning the video game. And she said that she was the first woman in any of the video games, and how Medusa, at the time, made a big fuss about it in the locker room, that Luna was in the game and not her. You know, Luna and Bam Bam were together on screen at that time. Bam Bam Bigelow was in that game. So that may have been why Luna made the cut and not Alundra Blaze. I don't know. But according to Luna, this greatly bothered Medusa. Medusa didn't mention that, but she did tell the story that she's told before. I know she told it once on Sean Mooney's old podcast about how fed up she was. There was a point in 90, it probably would have been 94, because I think 94 is when Luna left the company, but during her run there, Alundra Blaze, she's the women's champion, and she didn't exactly have a lot of competition. There were only about half a dozen or so women on the WWF roster at that time. She had no heels to really work with, and one night they were at a live event in Canada. And, yeah, the Vachon family, obviously, is big in Canada, so it's up in the Great White North. And Medusa was supposed to go over, and she just said, fuck it. Tonight, Luna, I want you to beat me for the title. And Luna was like, no, 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 I can't let you do that. I can't let you get fired. I can't let you get in trouble over this. And Medusa said that she didn't even care if she got fired. I don't care. It's the right thing to do. I want you to win the match. I'm going to put you on top of me. You're going to pin me. And you're going to win the women's championship. Because that's all Luna ever wanted. She wanted to be the women's champion in WWE. That was a big goal of hers. She never did attain that goal. So she was very emotional, and Medusa claimed she was crying. You would do that for me, you know, I can't believe that. It's so nice of you. But she couldn't do it. And she said when they went out there for the match, Luna just pulled herself off of Medusa when Medusa had put her on top of her for the pin. And like 2.5, Luna pulled herself off. And then they proceeded to I assume they proceeded to the usual finish with Medusa obviously going over. So she shared that story. There is another side that I think we need to consider here, though. When we hear these stories about WWE never really going all in on Luna Vachon at that time, or putting the championship on her, they could have done more with her, they should have done more with her, she was talented far beyond just being a valet. You know, all of that, it may well be true. But I do think, to be fair, we have to consider the fact that Luna had some pretty serious issues. And that, as much as anything, may have made WWE hesitant to put the title on her or invest in her in any kind of meaningful way. She would be out taking pills with Sherry, and Sherry had a very unceremonious exit herself from WWE in 93. I don't recall why. Maybe it was drug-related. Maybe she failed a test. I don't recall offhand exactly what the reason was. But it may have had to do with her own issues, because I remember her departure was very abrupt. The whole feud with Luna just ended when Sherry left, and that was it. It was never spoken of again. But Luna would be doing pills and would sleep, Gangrel said, for days at a time. She would be sleeping pretty much for 3 days straight, and he could like barely wake her up. So she was dealing with her own demons and her own issues. Her son said that his mother tried to kill herself multiple times, and if you ever looked at her wrists, she had scars on her wrists. So there may have been reasons that she never got higher than she did during her first run in the company there. Now, after she got fired, that's when she ended up in ECW, thanks to Nancy Sullivan. That's where the sadness really hit me, that Luna, Sherry, Woman, and I'll throw Elizabeth in there too, all dead, all gone, far too young. But she was brought into ECW to manage Tommy Dreamer during his feud with Raven and his lackeys, which is where the footage came from that they used in this episode of the steel cage match between Luna Vachon and Stevie Richards. They had a match. Luna won. Luna actually won that match. But then came her second stint with WWE during the Attitude Era. First with Goldust, the artist formerly known as Goldust. This is when they were pushing all the boundaries, and Goldust would come out in this with like a ball gag. And it was a very fucked up on-screen relationship between these two. But somehow it just fit, right? It seemed that these two were a good fit on screen with each other. Later on, she joined the Oddities and she became a babyface. They covered the issues with her and Sable. You can't tell the story of Luna in the Attitude Era in WWE unless you tell the story of Luna and Sable. And they had audio here that they included from a shoot interview that Luna did a number of years ago, where she claimed that Sable told her one day, she said, you know, I don't have to take bumps because Vince McMahon, Vince, she said, already told me that I'm going to be the women's champion. And it bothered Luna because here, you know, here's a woman who paid her dues. She had to do it the hard way, and she paid her dues, and here's this woman having everything handed to her based purely on her looks. Drove her nuts. And at WrestleMania 14, Sable tagged with Mark Mero against Goldust and Luna. Luna claimed that she was told by Vince McMahon directly before the match, if you bruise or you even scratch her, I'll fire you. So, do not hurt this woman, because if you do, it's going to be your job. And Luna went out there and she sold for Sable. It was Sable's, if it wasn't Sable's first match, it was one of her first couple of matches. I vaguely recall them. They may have done something with her and Luna on television in the lead up to WrestleMania, but I don't think it was much of a match. This really was her first match, her first real match. Especially one on any kind of grand scale with all these eyeballs on her at a big event. And Luna went out there and she ate a Sable bomb and she took a TKO for the finish. She made Sable look great. And when they got to the back, everybody was clapping and applauding and raving about the match. Luna thought it was for her at first when she came through the curtain, but then she realized very quickly people were looking past her. And right behind her was Sable. And that's who they were raving about and that's who they were applauding for. What a great job Sable did. And nobody said a word to Luna. It's like she didn't even exist. Like she was like a ghost walking through the curtain. And it broke her heart. She said she felt like nobody appreciated what she had just done. Mick Foley was there. He tried to talk to her and she just broke down crying. They didn't mention it here. And I don't frankly know why they didn't, because it's actually a great story. But in Luna's telling of the story previously, there was one person who came over to congratulate her on a job well done that night. When everybody else ignored her and everybody else sort of cast her aside, the one person who eventually did come over to her to tell her job well done and almost like give her a little hug or a pat on the back was Owen Hart. And she says she never forgot that. Now, on the Sable stuff, the reality is Sable was the star. Luna Vachon was not the star there. Sable was the star. You don't even have to like Sable, but you have to have enough sense in your brain to understand that, especially if you were a fan at that time and you kind of lived through that period, 98, 99, when Sable was at her hottest, the woman was a star. They put her on television and she became one of the most popular stars on the entire show. You know, you had Austin and you had Rock and Sable. Yeah, and you would maybe even say the same thing about China. If you made a top five, you could argue that Sable was absolutely in that top five. I remember, you know, her quarter hour segments on the television shows were through the roof. She had the multiple Playboy covers. The woman was a legitimate star. Her respect or lack thereof for the wrestling business aside, they saw that in her and they rightfully pushed her and they made a lot of money off the sex appeal of Sable. Which is all it was. Sable was not a very good wrestler. It was all sex appeal. And so that's why she was marketed and pushed so hard as a star. You go with the hot act that sells. But it sounds like what they did is they took Luna for granted. And you can understand why that would make her feel the way that she did. A couple of years later, she gets released. She was doing more drugs. Gangrel told the story of her spelling out the words fuck Vince in cocaine before snorting it all, which is amazing. But it got to be too much for him. And that's when he left her. Because he knew that if he stayed, he said, both of us would have ended up dead. He goes, I couldn't take it anymore. There was nothing I could do. I had to get out for me. For my health, for my safety. I could not be in this, you know, basically this toxic relationship, this toxic environment any longer. And it's sad, you know, she didn't see her son at all. They hardly ever spoke, him being in Texas and her being in Florida. She never even got to meet her granddaughter because she didn't think that she was good enough. She had self-esteem issues. She always thought she was too ugly. That was another issue that she struggled with when she was in WWE in the Attitude Era, is that you had all these women that they brought in. These models and these, you know, bikini models who were out there prancing around half naked like Sable. And Luna just, she never thought that she belonged. She never thought that she fit. She thought she was ugly and nobody wanted to look at her. And so she struggled with all of that stuff. But she was released from WWE, I want to say it was in 2000. And really, that was it for her in wrestling. She continued to wrestle independently, but she was never working for a major promotion again after that. She did work many years later as a tow truck driver. The episode didn't mention this, but she was found dead in her home by her mother in 2010. There were sniffing straws and crushed pill residue found all over the house. And it's believed that she was sniffing oxycodone. And her death was ruled an accidental overdose. They don't think that she killed herself. It was that she was just doing all of this stuff that she shouldn't have been doing. And she did too much. And unfortunately, she paid the price for it. She had checked herself into rehab the year before, which was paid for by WWE. But evidently, she relapsed. And WWE did keep in touch with her. Even after she completed her stint in rehab, I forget the lady's name who worked there. And she might still work there for WWE. But that woman was in touch with Luna, I think, on like a weekly basis, up until a few days before her death. And Luna would always claim, I'm clean, I'm sober, and I'm doing well. Clearly, that was not the case. Gangrel noted at the time that she had been very depressed because her home had burned down in a fire the year before. And actually, I remember talking about that on the Sound Off at that time. That there was a house fire and Luna had lost everything. All of her wrestling memorabilia that she had saved from her career over the years was gone. She lost her pets who died in the fire. I remember reading about Mick Foley starting an online campaign to help, help out Luna after that happened. And she had to live with her mother for a while. In fact, Foley tried to get her booked with TNA only a few weeks before her death. After her home had burned down, he had suggested bringing her in to manage Tommy Dreamer in a match against Raven, you know, given their history in ECW. And Luna turned down the gig. I guess it was offered to her and she said no. She politely declined because she said, I'm retired. And then a few weeks later, she was dead. And her ashes were spread on Andre the Giant's ranch in North Carolina, much as Andre's were. Andre was Luna's godfather. And the two of them were very close. Like the Canyon episode, this was more a, I would say, cautionary tale of taking someone with severe mental health problems and dropping them in the world of wrestling at a time when drug use was rampant and just there's a lot of stuff going on in the wrestling business at that time. That coupled with just making bad choices and the disastrous consequences of those choices, and you see it's just a complete recipe for disaster. In an industry that will chew you up and spit you out, especially back then, if you were a woman, it was harder. And that's when she came up, in the 80s, into that early 90s period. It will chew you up and spit you out. And not that she wasn't a tough lady, because she was, but that has an effect on you, and it leads you down a very bad road. And unfortunately for Luna, it led her down a very bad path, and her story didn't have a very happy ending to it. So I enjoyed it. It was a very sad episode, but I did enjoy kind of going back down memory lane with Luna, and they had, you know, family photos and stuff I hadn't seen before. And again, learning stuff about the person that I did not know coming in. Those are the episodes that I tend to like the most. This week's episode coming up is the second to last of the season. It's going to be covering Rob Black's XPW, merging hardcore porn and deathmatch wrestling. This should be fun. It was actually an XPW show where Vic Grimes took his infamous plunge off the scaffold nearly to his death at the hands of New Jack, which I think they showed in the episode they did on New Jack. I would be surprised if we get through an XPW episode this week without there being footage of that scaffold dive. And then the final episode in 2 weeks is going to be on the steroid trials, not just the Vince McMahon steroid trial, but the George Zahorian one. That's the one they interviewed the WWE lawyer, Jerry McDevitt, for that episode. That's going to be an episode that I am very much looking forward to covering. And we've talked about the steroid trial stuff on the podcast before. I'm hoping to learn maybe some new stuff in there that I didn't know going in. But that's going to be the big season finale. And I'll be here to cover it all. We got a couple more reviews left. I hope you've been enjoying them. So until next time, be well, stay safe. I will see you back here for the Dark Side review on XPW and all the other content that you can find on the YouTube channel. There's a lot of it, so check it out, and I'll be back with you soon. Take care, guys.